Up next on justicefound.org, Roland Washington and the Juma Ventures crew get together today for our ongoing collaboration with KPOO Radio and the Community Worker. We have with us today Paul Bowden, housing activist from RAP. And we also have from Juma Ventures, Dave Brown, Ronisha Johnson, and ongoing collaborator Leroy Moore, and myself, David Kordsmeyer. This is David Kordsmeyer from the Justice Foundation, and I am excited to bring you another edition of the Worker Justice Talk with the host, Roland Washington.
This is Roland Washington for the Community Worker, and I have with me today quite a few people. We're going to continue our collaboration with Juma Ventures, and then also there's the usual folks. So let's introduce ourselves. So my collaborator, Leroy Moore.
Hello, KPOO listeners. I'm back again, and thank you, Roland, and I'm glad to be here.
Okay, and then, we might as well call her our new collaborator, Ronisha Johnson.
Hey, KPOO. Glad to be here also. Thank you.
And then we have another person from Juma Ventures. He's taking... Well, I guess nobody can take the other two people's places. So we have another collaborator from Juma Ventures, and his name is Dave Brown.
Hey, what's up, KPOO?
Okay. And then David Kordsmeyer.
How you doing?
And then our guest today is Paul Bowden from the Western Regional Advocacy Project. Paul?
Hey, how you doing?
Okay. So it looks like we got a pretty decent mic check here. So what we're going to talk about is, actually, I've known Paul for longer than Ronisha is old. And we've been involved in projects that included rights for homeless people and then creating housing and, just a lot of stuff. And Paul is right now wrapping up a project called RAP. He's part of an organization called RAP. And so in our last show, people were, I believe somebody has stated something about losing parents, and then folks had said stuff about poverty and what was social justice and et cetera, et cetera. And Paul is somebody who was not only formerly homeless, but he's somebody that has definitely stepped up and put it in people's face. He's definitely an advocate. So wanted to have him come and be interviewed by our Juma Venture folks to see you know, since you guys were looking for motivation, this might be somebody that you can talk to for motivation. So maybe first and foremost, we should let Paul tell us about RAP and the coalition and some of the other things and what brought him to where he is today.
Okay. So let me just start off by saying, yeah, I was homeless for quite a while when I was 16 till I was like 22 or 23. But the issue of homelessness is more than the individual stories of people that are homeless. The issue of homelessness is that there's 1.3 million people every day, that there's 904,000 kids that go to public school every day that don't have a home to go to when they get out of school. And that is why we have to start looking at this as not, oh, that bum on the corner panhandling me as I walk by. But why is there 1.3 million people in this country that since 1983 have found themselves without a home? And what RAP is trying to do is take the best of the social justice organizations that we've hooked up with over the years as the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. We got to see what other groups are doing. And we got to see that the fights that we're in, the criminalization of poor people, of homeless people, of mentally ill people, the way that police and jail has become the answer to the social ills that befall all of us in this country is what we have to start fighting against. That this is human rights. This isn't homeless people's rights. That this is human rights. This isn't just the why are you picking on the young black man and trying to demonize that person. This is what are you doing to us as a community, all of us. And that's where we have to start focusing our energy, because that's where we see how much we have in common as opposed to what we might be doing differently. And it's a each one, teach one philosophy, because we all got something to offer. We all got something to give. And when we're smart, we realize we all got a lot to learn. And that's sort of where the school that we're coming from.
My particular question is, what do you guys do as an organization? Like the specifics, do you guys go and speak at schools or like the specifics of the organization?
With RAP as the organization that we're talking about, it's only about 2 years old, just coming on to 2 years old. We did a report, and I hate to say a report because it's more than that. It's artwork. It's documentation of what created homelessness. And what we saw was the federal government went from an $83 billion a year budget for providing affordable housing for everybody to $18 billion and has now only gone back up to $20 billion. And that was between 1979 and 1983. And it was in 1983 across the country that we started once again since the Depression opening emergency shelters, cause and effect. Now, the answer since 1983 has been to redefine who's homeless and who isn't homeless and to life skills train us back into society as opposed to life skills training society to respond to the fact that we're homeless. Mm-hmm. And that took a while. You got to make a shift. You got to stop asking for stuff, and you got to start demanding stuff. But when you demand, you earn respect, and you got to earn respect. But when I ask you to help me, what's the respect in that? Mm-hmm. There's no quid pro quo. Nothing's coming back. But when I say, hey, you know what? I'm a young person in this country. I deserve an education. It's a right that I'm entitled to an education. And you know what? I want it to be quality. And I want my teachers paid. I want computers in our schools just like the rich kids got. Mm-hmm. That's demanding respect. And that's the shift that has to happen. You know, I spent years working in hospitality house in the Tenderloin, hearing person after person talking about their friends as if their friends is trash. I'm not like those crackheads. I ain't doing this. And you know what? They're all right. You know, the image that's put out about who's homeless and what is poor people's lives like, mm-hmm. that image isn't real. That's not who we are. And we know it about ourselves, but even we see it on the news. We hear it in the radio. We see it in the newspaper. We start believing it about each other. Mm-hmm. And that's the first chain. That's why we end up shooting each other. That's why we end up ripping each other off. Because we're buying the line that we're all demons and that we're all to be feared and that I'll kill you in a second. That ain't true. That ain't real. And we know it about ourselves. We have to start believing it about each other. And that's the kind of energy that we're trying to create in Skid Row in L.A., and in the Tenderloin, and in the Western Addition, and in the Mission District in San Francisco, and up in Seattle, and up in Portland, and show that, you know, they're criminalizing us everywhere we go, then we got to respond as a community, all of us together, no matter what city we're living in. And so we're trying to pull that framework together and create a message that shows power in the lives of poor people and in the brains of poor people, that we have power. We just got to believe it. And we got to... Individually, we ain't got a whole lot of power. But when you bring enough of us together, we can demand change, and we can make the change, because it's been done before. And it wasn't a change in people's DNA that decided we were going to become homeless. So yeah. Then there must have been something systemic going on. And what we tracked back was, hey, you know what? These suckers cut all the funding for affordable housing and started life skills training classes and shelters. Nah, you know what? We ain't going to accept that. And that's what we're trying to pull together. And that's our report is called Without Housing. And because we ain't homeless, we're just people without housing. And that's the message we want to put out.
Yeah. My question is, again, like, how do you, such a big problem like that, how do you stop, how do you start to solve the problem? Like, if you were to target younger children to make them more aware about homelessness and try to make it preventable, what kind of things would you...
Well, here's what we decided to do after many times screwing this up. So, you know, I'm not. It's not like I had an epiphany and came up with this stuff. Is we're starting small within the groups of people that we know that have a social justice commitment. We're not trying to change the world yet. Mm-hmm. We're digging the foundation so that the next generation can make the change. Because I feel that too much of the what I've seen in the organizing that I've been witness to over the last 25 years is we want the world and we want it now is a very elitist comment. You know, we gotta be willing to be the laborers, to be nothing. You know, to be the ones that people may even forget who we were 100 years, 50 years from now. I don't care. So long as they're forgetting while they're living inside a house, I don't care if they remember who the hell I was. And neither does anyone else that's a part of rap. We want to lay a foundation so that the next generation doesn't go through what we went through. And I think that kind of generational thinking in terms of how to create change in this society is very different than what we witnessed during the War on Poverty or to end the Vietnam War. And I guess with wars, it is much more visceral and immediate. But with societal change, you got to be willing to take it one step at a time. Because you get too far out, you're sexy for 15 minutes like I was back in the early 80s. And, oh, look, the homeless guy, look at what he's doing. He's helping create a housing corporation. Isn't that cute? But then as soon as I started talking about the cops screwing with us, all of a sudden I wasn't cute anymore. I was an advocate. You know, so you can't let yourself get too – they can't determine what your role is and whether or not you're well-known. You have to be confident enough within yourself to be nothing or everything depending upon what the people you work with are trying to put forward.
In other words, leave your footprints. Leave a footprint.
I had another question, too, also. I was wondering, I heard you talk about, you know, the stress and how you guys give into the images to help rob each other. And I know you were homeless once before. I want to know, how did you sort of rise above that? What did you think about? How did you stay focused?
Two things. One is I had advantages that the guys I was hanging out with didn't, which was I was a white boy and originally, until my mom died, went to a really good school in Long Island. I got kicked out of it, but still, I went to it. I had a good baseline of education, mm-hmm. so I could read and write really well, and I was given opportunities that I know that my friends that were better at the stuff than me didn't get. Mm-hmm. But what really changed it for me was, one, meeting these guys from Europe and then ending up over in Copenhagen, Denmark for a little bit, and Amsterdam. And those kids, man, they weren't taking nothing. They were demanding. You know, if they didn't have a place to live, they squatted and they took the building. You know, and they weren't playing no games. And I'm thinking, wow, these guys really demand a lot of their government. They expect a lot of their government. And you come back here and people are getting kicked out of the welfare office as if they're chumps for making a mistake, not even for lying, and accepting it and walking away and saying, oh, man. You know, and so I was thought, well, why don't we have the same expectations? You know, and how do you start creating that mindset? Not that you're asking to be taken care of, but that you're demanding the opportunity to be able to take care of yourself. And so I started looking at these families and these little kids that were lined up in front of, on Livermore Street, in front of a hospitality house, to get a shelter bed for the night. And I said, oh, no, man, that's not right. That's not right. And we started organizing with our friends to try to take care of these guys. So a little bit of it may have been patronizing it and did not intentionally. It may have been a little like, you know, oh, the young men are going to take care of the little kids and stuff. But they were our community. And we saw it as like, man, you know, I'm 23 years old. If I got to sleep out in the street, so what? I'm not going to let this 2-year-old kid sleep out in the street. And I think you'd be amazed how many homeless people see the world that way, that I'll take care of myself, but I want to see these other guys helped out.
I want to know, what are some of the main causes of homelessness?
Well, far and away, the number one cause is the $83 billion, or now $52 billion a year that we no longer spend. I mean, that's $52 billion every year that we as a society no longer dedicate to ensuring that everybody has an opportunity to a roof over their head. That's, you're not going to make that up with a $1 billion a year homeless program. And substance abuse is an issue in the homeless community, just like it's an issue in every other segment of our society. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Before 1982, 83, when we opened all of our shelters, we had substance abuse issues. We had mental health issues. All of these things that the Chronicle, especially those elitist, classist, racist people at the Chronicle, all of those issues that they like to identify as the issue, all existed prior to us opening our shelters again in the early 1980s. So, yes, they are legitimate issues for all segments of our community. But you want to talk about people being without housing, you got to talk about the housing budget, because that's what makes somebody homeless without a home. And that's the number one answer. That's what created homelessness, was lack of housing. And what created lack of housing was a federal government that increased home ownership programs to the tune of $122 billion a year from $40 billion, at the same time simultaneously decreasing affordable housing programs from $83 billion a year to $20 billion a year. That's homelessness in a nutshell.
So, Paul, can you maybe give the definition of affordable housing?
Housing,
I mean, Is it the projects, or is it low-income housing?
As we've been eliminating the affordable housing programs, we've been redefining what is affordable housing. And the bottom line is housing that's affordable to the poorest people in your community. And, yes, there are many different ways of doing it. The problem is we're not doing any of them effectively because we've shortchanged all of them. And every time a government cuts programs, I mean, you see this in mental health probably more so than in any other arena. They create new programs within the program that they've already cut. So they eliminate $16 billion a year from public housing, the projects, and then do Hope 6. You know, they eliminate $50 billion or 30,000 units a year in the rural housing programs and then do a homelessness prevention program. You know, it's deceitful how and then we buy into it by writing 10-year plans to end homelessness or 5-year continuum of care plans or community housing affordability strategy plans. You know, we buy into it in terms of how do we spend the measly little pittance that you're willing to scrape off the plate and provide us with. And we're going to write 10-year plans on how to do that instead of just saying, you know what, you know where to put this plan. And that's where you put it until you give us our housing money back, because we ain't writing no more plans for you.
So my young peers, do you guys know anybody in your age group that is homeless or having those type of issues that we're talking about?
Well, this is Ranisha speaking. I don't know too many teenagers that are homeless because of the housing situation, but my mother, she lives over in the Bayview Hunters Point district, and I know they're tearing some of the lower income housing down, and they're relocating, and you have a certain amount of time to relocate to the next area, I guess, that's available, but there's not a lot of houses available, so I guess that leaves a lot of people without a place to live also.
Does that make sense to you at all?
It doesn't make any sense to me, because if I were to put myself in a predicament, you know, when you do live in low-income housing, it seems to me that, you know, you have a lot of stuff to worry about on your plate, and you're getting this letter out of nowhere saying that you have to move, and moving takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of time, so it doesn't make any sense to me. Where are these people supposed to go? Where are they supposed to live, especially if they have young children? And a lot of the teenagers who live over in the Hunters Point district, and they don't get along with the teenagers that live in the Fillmore district, what's going to happen then?
That's right. That's right. So do you think it's out of – do you think they're trying to make a statement? Is it ignorance? What do you think – I guess what we call this the government. What do you think the government is doing when they do this type of stuff?
I think they're not recognizing who needs what. I think they're looking past the people who are benefiting from the resources. Like the rich people, they're just paying attention to them. Basically, that's what it seems like to me.
Well, actually, you know, Terry, the founder, was telling you guys about history and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is not the first time this has happened. And this is not the first time that people have been in this situation. This might be the first time that people aren't really rising up. I mean, I think that's the key thing. And then you guys are the next generation. What do you think? How do you think this issue should be addressed? Should we keep doing it the way we're doing it, or?
No, I think people need to start speaking up, because I've heard a lot of complaints. Like my mother's complained to me. Well, she sort of likes the thought of moving because of all the violence. But I heard a lot of people complain about it. It's been in the Bayview newspaper, but I haven't seen anybody doing any marches, any protests. Haven't seen anyone voicing their opinions or anything about the situation. So I feel like if people were to voice their opinions, and maybe if we got our march on, then we can change things. But until then, they're going to keep doing what they're doing.
Hello, Paul.
Hey.
Glad to see you. I have a question for Paul, and I also have an answer for what people were talking about in the Bay View. I think what happened in the Bay View, because I was there during one of the so-called town hall meetings with the mayor, and come to find out that the mayor promised all the people on relocation apartments, and come to find out after we did some investigation, a lot of the people were paid off. So that's what's really happening in the Bay View, is that the mayor is making all these promises and digging deep in people's pockets. But I want to go back to Paul, because, you know, I've been in the coalition of homelessness. You know, you took my nonprofit in back in the 90s, and I saw the coalition do its work. And the coalition does have policies that every year when the budget cuts come, you know, you guys put out your policies. But once again, we see mayor after mayor coming with their own policy, from Frank Jordan to Pop in under Gavin Newsom. So, you know, what can you say when mayors don't even listen to organizations that are run by homeless people and that have their own policies?
Welcome to America. I think it goes to time to get the march on. I mean, I really think that's what it's come down to. I think the naive little belief that some of us may have had a while ago that, you know what, if we package it right and if we present it right and if we do our homework and if we spell everything correctly or whatever, in order to get them to pay attention, to see that we're actually out there, the people's budget is actually out there, yeah, talking to people. You know, it is something that comes from the community, and frankly, that don't carry the water. Oh. And that's when it's time to get off the, okay, it's a process thing, and get into it's time to march. Because I have not seen it this quiet. The cuts that Schwarzenegger did, the line item veto, that rich little pompous person sits down and eliminates $54 million in the sweep of a pen for mentally ill homeless people. Yeah. And where's the outrage? You know, where's the fires burning? Because I know inside people's hearts it's still there. We have to translate that into not having the biggest demonstration since, you know, the Iraq war started, but getting it going on a regular basis so that when people are ready to plug in, there's something to plug into. And that's on all of us that do organizing and all the organizations that do organizing. We need to start organizing together and start doing more street-based organizing.
Yeah, we need to deprofessionalize grassroots, because actually that's how I met Paul, because when we were doing the shelter stuff, I was literally like I felt I was a German shepherd over there in the shelter. When people didn't want people and needed a way to get them out, of course, everybody's supposed to be mentally ill, and I was supposed to be 5150 of them. But what wound up happening was there were times where people would get put out, and then the coalition would come down with a banner and march on the shelters. And back then, that was just freaking people out. And in fact, I think there was another group that would march, but if they saw the marches, that just freaked them out. And then after that, the housing was started, the community housing partnership, et cetera, et cetera. But right at the moment, we have a lot of people that are professional and want to do all this processing and intellectualizing, and people are losing their housing. All the housing that Renisha is talking about that's being displaced was housing that the federal government paid to house people probably in the 60s and 50s and stuff. So what is the, instead of intellectualizing it, you just need to sit there and say, no, don't put the people out. If you didn't remodel it for 60, you know, for almost 50 years, why are you going to remodel it and put people out? Why can't you just remodel it and let the people stay? Why were the people in there allowed to live in these conditions, and then the only way you can upgrade their conditions is to put them out? And so we need, or should have, or it would be great for the next group, really you're after that group, because he and I are a particular age, and then the people behind us aren't stepping up. So maybe you guys need to step up and kick those in front of you.
In the butt.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're actually dealing with the effects of this. I mean, now it's gone from, it's not just people being homeless, it's people I don't know if the word could be anger or whatever's going on, but now people are killing each other. And now people are even killing homeless people. I mean, it's just all this madness in a way. And we need some people to step up. We need some grassroots.
And that's where rap was created, was born from, was there are some awesome organizations out there. There are some people that are out there that are kicking it and are kicking it every day and are doing beautiful work. And it's a matter of how – and they're also all up to their butts and alligators, and sometimes they forget that they actually were there to drain the swamp. You know, I mean, it's such a daily struggle for existence for righteous social justice-based organizations. And what RAP was created to do was try to at least be a support system to these five. And if we could start making our mistakes amongst people that we trust and know and learning how to bring these groups together, learning how to get the skills to use the media instead of waiting for C.W. Nieves to wake up. You know, I mean, the Chronicle has been supporting Matrix-like activities and the policing of poor people as far back as we've been doing it. And we can't wait no more. We got to teach each other how to get the skill sets to do it for ourselves and create our own voice and then trust that our voice is real and people will buy into it and the next generation and the generation after that will want to be a part of it. One, because we make it real, and two, because we make it fun. It's fun taking over the mayor's office. It's a kick. You know what? Yep. And it's our office. Yep. It's supposed to be our mayor. So when you go in there and sit down and say, I ain't leaving, it's your space. It's your city, and you got a right to be there. You know, our role will be doing it at Feinstein's office, because I ain't seen nothing coming out of that woman's mouth that shows any concern for the lives of poor people. And when you sit there looking out that window in Pacific Heights and the view that she's got, you don't see poor people. And her only response to homelessness at any time in the past year was how upsetting she finds it when she's driving to the airport to have to drive past those people. And that's our federal government at work.
And that's what they used to call black folk, those people and them people. So we got a couple of minutes left. Does anybody have one last question or one last statement before we go to the next one?
This is Ranisha speaking. I have a question. When you're a homeless person and the odds are set against you like that, it seems like it's a system designed for failure. How would you seek out for help? Like, say if I was a homeless person right now and I wanted to try, by all means, how would I seek out for help?
I mean, usually you do it through word of mouth to somebody else says, oh, you know what? You can trust the Mission Neighborhood Resource Center, or you can trust Caduceus, or you can trust Poor Magazine, or you can trust Power. Like, you'll get it through word of mouth. Where's the places you can go? And this is the hardest part for me to admit, but with the other organizations, what you learn really quick is not to lie, because then you got to remember the lie, but not to tell them anything that they don't directly ask you. Because they've got criteria, and if you give the wrong answer, you don't fit the system. I mean, the most upsetting thing right now is there's a big debate going on in Washington, D.C., that if a family is living in a motel or a hotel or SRO or living doubled up with other people, they have to have been homeless three times in the past six – they have to have moved three times in the past 6 months or twice in the past 3 weeks. If they are to receive any homeless assistance whatsoever.
Wow.
You're gonna be telling a whole new crew of families, you better lie, because if you can't show me that you've moved your family twice in the past 3 weeks, I'm not going to be able to serve you in my homeless program anymore, because you no longer will qualify as being homeless. Now, we have dissected the lives of poor people to the degree that we are killing them. When we start getting into that level of who is sitting around the table coming up with solutions like that, it's Phil Mangano, it's Dianne Feinstein, and it's the white elite rich establishment in Washington, D.C., because almost every poverty organization in Washington, D.C. is now repped by people that are going to dress and going to act in a way that they can be accepted on Capitol Hill instead of being responsible to the people in the Western Addition and in the Bayview and in the Tenderloin. And that's a dynamic that we got to change ASAP.
Are you a small business or entrepreneur? You know you need to be online, but you don't know where to start? Come to RedTap. We'll help you with all of your online needs. Everything from website design to e-commerce site setup to e-marketing. We'll speak to you in your language and help you build a successful online business. Give us a call at 415-285-0585. Red Tap is located in the heart of the Mission District at 1360 Valencia Street and is a proud sponsor of the JusticeFound.org podcast. You've been listening to the Worker Justice Talk podcast edition with Roland Washington. The Worker Justice Talk is a production of JusticeFound.org and Red Tap. Most editions are recorded live at the studios of Red Tap, located in the heart of the Mission District in San Francisco. The Worker Justice Talk is available online at justicefound.org and for download on iTunes. The post-production audio engineer was me, David J. Kortzmeyer. Join us next time for another edition of the Worker Justice Talk.